This is a replay of the Wednesday night, March 6th WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings. Unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together, and whatever you'd like to talk about, well, I'm up for it. Yeah, raring to go, actually. And I promise we talk about D.B. Cooper, and we will. But before we get to that, a couple things. Firstly, if you're calling the show, and I hope you are, dial 888-876-5593. And the reason for that, we've had several numbers over the years that were still lingering there, and a few weeks ago, I just took the other numbers out of the system. So the only one that's going to work is the only one you know about that's going to work is 888-876-5593. And yeah, I pick up the freight. So that's the deal on that. But yeah, one that we had, there were a couple that we separated out that had been used in the past. And boy, I tell you, we still get a lot of calls on them. So if you would, 888-876-5593, that will do it right here. One of the things I want to talk about is bureaucracy tonight. I've been going through the process of needing a small permit for a Connex box. Now, you might know that Connex boxes, well, they're not actually Connex boxes. That's what the government called them. They're not manufactured by a company called Connex. They're containers, obviously, intermodal, mostly, you know, from China over the sea, and one-trip containers. And they make nifty storage containers, and they also make nifty houses in some cases, or offices, or whatever you want. And they're all over the landscape, don't you know? And I have several. And so I decided I'm going to add one to one of my sites. And this is a site where 4 years ago, actually going back 5 years now, I unsuspectingly put a Connex box on the site and applied for the permit. And bottom line is the process took over a year. Over a year before I could do anything with it. It was just insane. But after that, I got all the documentation and everything they wanted at that time and the whole thing together. And don't you know, so this time I'm putting another box on that same property. And I think, well, this will be easy because after all, I've got all the documentation. So I submitted a while ago. And then yesterday I find out, well, the engineering letter, by the way, there was never a requirement of an engineering letter. That was a plus that I put in there because in the past I got hung up for months because of wind loading. Well, this time, so I put the same letter. It talks about wind, but what we care about is penetrations. I, of course, said, what do you think I'm doing in that box? And we need to know all the penetrations and all. So, okay, fine. So I have to call a structural engineer to say, could you add a sentence about intrusions and penetrations? Okay, fine. And today I get them. Well, we need this because we also need to know how you are going to seal the holes. Holes. Yeah, the two air conditioning units, the slots for them. Needless to say, they'll be sealed within an inch of anybody's life, and more than the more than any spec would provide. But again, nothing at all anywhere on this. And of course, this was just an afterthought in an email. And I thought, my God, if I submitted the next study and it didn't include holes, which of course it wouldn't have, then it would be back to that. And as I'm going through this, the first thing that I realize is, oh, this is why there's so much unpermitted work. I get it now. Yeah, exactly. Who but a chump, that would be me, would go through the process. And so now they're trying to defend their positions. And in each one of the defenses, it raises yet another issue. And so this afternoon, I was just shaking as I, yeah, I tried to politely, draft a response. Yeah, I'm trying to clean it up, just telling you about it. In any event, when I was doing this, I thought, you know, I'll bet there are literally hundreds of people, if there are that many listening to me, who have had this same bureaucratic run-in, and it's utter nonsense. I don't know if there's any place on earth that has a smooth process dealing with bureaucracy. I realize to an extent just the concept is an oxymoron, but nonetheless, talk about counterproductive. And I know I'm not alone. So if you have tales to share, boy, I want to hear it. Maybe it'll make me feel better. Yours will be so damn bad that I'll feel perfectly good about mine. But we'll see. It helps that I own a radio station in the city, and I'm going to have the county commissioner on with me Monday to discuss something else. But he doesn't know about this subtopic. Yeah, you can bet it'll come up. So I'm curious about your tales. And yes, we will talk to D.B. Cooper. But I see Kimberly in Kansas City, who doesn't call us often anymore because she has something known as a real life, and she's gracing us with a phone call. So Kimberly, welcome to WGN Radio.
I'm so honored to be speaking with you, and I understand the whole bureaucracy thing. I mean, it's like if you bring something up, then they're going to make a mountain out of a molehill. So it's like you just try not to bring anything up that you don't have to bring up.
You're right. I never included that letter. Fool that I am. Fool. You are so right, Kimberly. Why did I do that?
You're trying to be nice.
Yeah.
Well, you're trying to be nice. And we know what happens to nice guys, right?
Right. And of course, they try to be oh so polite, the smiling executioner in their replies, which of course, you know, really sets me off. When they say, like, as I'm sure you can understand, you know, no.
Oh, yes.
And, that's
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's where I learned to conjugate four-letter words in ways that have never been thought of.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, the other, I've got my 91 students right now online. I'm a Braille instructor for a major program, and we're one of the certification programs in the United States who certifies Braille transcribers. And so I've got 91 students, and I absolutely love what I'm doing. Absolutely love it. Probably one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. So I'm doing that, and I am also taking a class at my local community college called How to Write the Book You've Always Wanted to Write. And I've never thought that I have a story, but my mother, bless her soul, seems to think that I do. And so I'm going to give it a shot for her. And So when I was rereading some of your book the other day and found what you were saying about how John prodded you until you got it written, I thought,
I never would have on my own written that that book because, you know, for whatever reason, I people have always talked about what a great writer I am, but I've never liked the process. And I was radio editor for 3 years at Billboard. I thought, that's enough writing for a lifetime. Thank you very much. But, you know, John, no, you got to write a book. So I wrote a book. And people always say, well, when's the next book coming out? Well, that would be never. So...
Well, it's just a matter of knowing how to get published and knowing how to get the artwork done.
Oh, easy. That stuff's easy. You know me. When I undertake a project, you know, Kimberly, I have to dissect it. It's like in the 90s when I wanted to learn about streaming. Of course, I had to be a streaming company, mystreamingserver.com. And I even had.
I wish I had your knowledge.
Yeah. I had to gain the knowledge. So I learned how to do that and all. And this was back in the RTSP days. You don't even want to know. But I learned how to stream and all that. Well, when it came time for the book, of course, I wasn't interested in writing it, but I said, I'm becoming a publishing company. And I did. I have a block of ISBN numbers and everything. So you can do it. Absolutely. And they'll give you the ISBN numbers for free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I was, you know, when I say self-published, I meant it. Most people, they turn it over to some vanity press or some self-publisher or to Amazon or something like on demand or what that. No way. I'm becoming the publishing company. And I did.
So I just need to get my own publishing company?
Well, just make, follow the rules. You know, there's a few things and you want to make sure that, you know, you're covered on libel and that kind of stuff and that you're not doing anything untoward. And you can form a company. I incorporate because, of course, I love to incorporate. Been doing that since high school. I incorporate and then I just applied for the ISBN numbers and they sent me a dozen of them. I used one.
Okay.
But just in case. Then you know you can get a local printer to do it for you, and I know in your case you'll need a little help on that because you're gonna need somebody who can see the pages, but you'll find that's not
well good. And a good illustrator type thing. But
what are you illustrating?
Well, you know, pictures. What she's interested in me doing is writing a memoir of kind of my experiences, and I suppose there is something to be said for being one of the first, you know, children to have been mainstreamed into public school and going from a reel-to-reel tape recorder to very sophisticated computer equipment and seeing all of that, among other things.
Well, yeah, I think the mainstreaming in the schools is fascinating right there because very few people can imagine that experience, and I'm sure you've got a ton of stories.
Oh, well, it was good. You know, it was a lot of good things, you know, and some struggles along the way, but nonetheless, I'm going to see where this goes, and the exciting part is that this individual who is going to be the instructor for the class, I wanted to take a live class, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, I love being online, but just that collaborating with people, you know, and being in a room with other people and collaborating with someone, I wanted to do that.
Okay.
So, the person who is teaching the class has written over 32 or 33 mystery books.
Oh, good. Then there you go.
So
she'll be able
to. Out of my genre completely, I have a lot to learn.
She'll be able to tell you a lot of things. Now, granted, she's probably written for a publisher. I doubt she's publishing her own mystery books. But at the same time, she probably knows most of the pitfalls and can fill you in.
Yep, I'm sure. So I'm very lucky to have her.
Yeah.
So that starts the 19th of March. And, of course, I've been playing online chess with people all over the world. I just got finished playing a woman from Colombia last week and a woman from Spain the week before who did not speak English. So it's fun to know I don't have to travel anymore to speak another language. And that's interesting. And to learn about other people in other cultures who are blind, that was fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, the online chess, I assume many of your opponents are not blind.
No, they actually are.
Oh, okay.
It's a new group called Chess Queens, and it's a group that is forming, and this is good for people to know if they know anyone who'd be interested in this, but it's a group called Chess Queens, and it's a group that is exclusively for people who are blind, and specifically females, because females traditionally are a minority in chess. And so it's a group that is formed for specifically women who are blind who would like to learn more about chess. So it's through the United States Blind Chess Association, USBCA.
Wow, I like this.
So,
this is great.
I'm very excited. I have never won a game.
Well, that's all right. I don't even know how to play it. So you will.
It's a blonde wig for Kimberly.
yeah. No, but that's all right. You'll get good at it if you're interested.
Yeah.
I mean, after all, you learned to play the ukulele, so, you know.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, and the dulcimer and the piano.
Right, yeah. So consequently, you're willing to step out of the box and do a few things.
Yes, so. I'm pretty bizarre, but... I had one more question for you, and I wasn't sure if I'm bold in turning and asking you this. Mm. My parents just had their 60th wedding anniversary in downstairs in the basement, like many people do. They have a collection of Elvis albums.
Mm-hmm.
We no longer have a turntable, of course, so they're just sitting there, and I'm like, okay, guys, sell these. Yeah.
Well,
just sitting there.
All right, I hate to be the one to tell you this, but they have virtually no value. And
okay.
Let me Let me tell you why, and it'll make sense to you when you think about it in terms of collectibles.
Okay.
If you're collecting coins, you want the one where the mint made the mistake and there's only three of them around and they're worth $47 million or something. You know, you want something that is so rare. Now, the problem with hit records is that there are a zillion of them. And when you're talking about...
Even though they're from the era.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't... See, now, you're talking about the 50s and the 60s, and you're talking about records that sold millions of copies and that were on RCA or possibly Sun, but most likely RCA. No, there are so many of these that you can probably get them online for 29 cents plus shipping. You know, you can go to something like Discogs, DISCOGS.com, and just punch in Elvis Presley, and you will see all the albums that were released. And when you click on any of the albums, it will tell you what the people who have it, what price it's going for right now. So let me do this for you, and we'll see what we get. Because I must admit, Elvis is not one that I would normally look up. But that doesn't
me neither.
Yeah, right.
I wouldn't either.
Right. All right. So let's look at
DISCOGS.com.
Yeah. So now I'm looking at Elvis. Come on, Elvis, load for me.
Got my little Braille word processor. And, they've got other albums, too. They've got the Browns, and they've got, you know, what teenagers and young adults would have gotten at that time.
All right, so the first album Elvis released was 1956. It was called Elvis. And right now there are 1,121 copies for sale from $1.09 on. So you can get that. And that's the first one he ever released. Now, if you remember any of the titles of the albums they had, like, did they have like King Creole? A lot of people had King Creole for reasons I don't know. But the 62 cents if you want one, plus shipping, and there are 1,000 available. See, I often tell the story of the five sharps. This was supposedly the rarest 45 ever. There's only one problem, Kimberly. The record didn't exist. It was a 78. There never was a 45 copy. But it got, I mean, there's bootlegs, of course, now, but the original was never, ever released. And so people were offering literally like $100,000 a copy, and they'd have paid it. Well, of course, the thing didn't exist. But I'll tell you one that did was there was a guy named Frank Wilson, not J. Frank Wilson, who did Last Kiss. Not that guy. A guy named Frank Wilson, who was a writer for Motown, and he released a record on Motown, Do I Love You? And the record was shipped out minimally, maybe 500-600 copies. And Berry Gordy asked him, I need to know, Frank, do you want to be a performer for us, or do you want to be a writer? And he said, well, honestly, I just want to be a writer. He said, then we'll recall the record. And they did. The distributors all sent them back. Well, all sent them back except a handful of copies. I guess about 20 years ago, I heard one sold for £37,000 in Great Britain. Because there's like five of them. It's funny because John was looking through my collection one day and almost passed out because there it was, Frank Wilson. I said, no, you got to understand, it looks like it, but that's a boot. Trust me, that is not the original record. But because there were so few of them, they have a lot of value. So when you're talking about something like the Browns, that doesn't even really have much in the way of collectibles value. Nobody cares about that. If you had something that was really seminal and also something that was in limited supply, now you've got something and it may be hard to sell, but it will have value when you can. But what you're talking about sells for pennies.
Okay. And not being able to have the access to eBay and some of those other traditional things that people would have gone to, and, you know, someone would say, have some common sense, go look it up yourself.
I didn't think about it. Let's look up eBay. It should be about the same.
Elvis
Presley album. Let's see what comes up there. And
we're just beginning to clean things out, and I was excited. Someone said on some forum that they were worth like thousands of dollars, and so I thought,
well, now if you have a promotional copy that's signed by Elvis himself and it was only distributed to six radio stations, absolutely. But if you're talking about an album like Elvis from Hawaii or whatever, probably on eBay, they might try to sell it for, and there's some people on eBay who will try to put prices on anything. It doesn't mean that they're going to sell the item. That's why I like Discogs, because those are people who are selling to other people.
Okay.
But I'm just looking right now. I see a vintage Elvis album. It's 95 cents. Then I see another one. This guy's trying to sell the same album for $850 or best offer. It's like in your dreams.
More power to
Well, that's right.
Capitalism's all about.
Well, yes.
There's a sucker born every minute, and you'll find them.
Well, that's right. And my favorite on eBay was this. A guy was selling a pair of vintage Papagallo shoes, and these were something that I wore in the early 60s, so I loved vintage Papagallo shoes. Well, this guy apparently thought that he could make a lot of money. He said, I swear to God, vintage Papagallo shoe for amputee. Right one, 1995. Left one, 1995. He split up the pair. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That was my all-time favorite eBay post.
Yes.
Most of these you'll see like Elvis Blue Hawaii for $2.99. You know.
And I know they have that.
Yeah.
Well, this is a young little couple at one time in small town Kansas that, you know, had the typical stuff that you would have.
Yeah.
A young couple, and
absolutely
meant something to them, but
it meant something to millions of others, and that made it fun for your memories, but nothing for collectibles.
Okay, and we no longer have a turntable, so we'll probably be disposing of them.
Try to donate them if there's somebody who'll take them, and you know that's hard. I've talked to many people, like I don't know what I'll do with my stuff. I've got over 50,000 easily, maybe over 100,000. I don't know. I haven't counted rooms full of it, I have no idea because no one wants them. But maybe you'll find someone.
Well, you know, the thing is, I got rid of my turntable years ago. I love the sound of vinyl, but just for reasons of space, you know, I'm doing files and CDs and
most people. You've ended the half hour, and so I hope you will call me soon, but send me an email with links, like to the Chess Queens and all that, and I'll put it on Raleigh.net.
Oh, my goodness. I would be honored. And thank you, everybody, for your time tonight.
Absolutely.
Good night, Chicago.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. So, All right. Good to hear from Kimberly. 888-876-5593. 8888 ROLLYE on WGN Radio.
You are my special angel, sent from up above. The Lord smiled down on me, sent an angel to
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, proving that even when record royalty is involved, it doesn't always sound good. That's Jerry Naylor on Tower, which was Capitol's budget label, doing a remake of My Special Angel, the Bobby Helms original. And that's Jerry Naylor, who would have turned 85 today, and you may recognize the voice because he was the cricket who became the lead singer after Buddy Holly's demise, and did several things on his own. In fact, he also did a version of Mind Excursion, the Anders and Ponsi song. So hard to believe, but nonetheless, 85 he would have been today. Born in 1939 and Chalk Mountain, Tennessee, grew up in Carlsbad, and he was a disc jockey for a while on KPEP in San Angelo, and then, of course, all that West Texas sound, and later wound up with the Crickets, and died in 2019, McMinnville, Oregon, 80 years old. I don't know the cause. So, yeah, rest in peace, Jerry Naylor, but hard to believe, would have been 85 today. So, 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And that is going to take us to Leah in Marcus Hook. How are you feeling tonight, Leah?
Oh, good. How are you feeling?
Well, I can't complain. No,
how's your tooth?
Well, tomorrow I get the permanent crown.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, so, you know, I know, I love this woman, but I will say that every time I've had her put in a crown, which unfortunately is now like four, something goes really wrong. So we'll see tomorrow what happens.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll send you good healing vibes tomorrow.
Thank you. Yes, I'll at least have a story. So
yes. We'll wait to hear.
Yeah. So what's up?
Well, you were talking about how things were, the more rare they are, the more money you can get for them. There's one exception to that rule, and it's Barbies.
Not exactly. Let's talk about this. And
Barbies, the minute you buy them, the minute they go up in value.
Yes, but not big, big value. Now, I will say that 1959 Barbie, if you had it in the first run and you have Barbie in pristine condition and you've got her in that black and white bathing suit and you've got her in the original box, right? That will bring you $27,000.
But, But 70s Barbies are really,
You'd be surprised.
Worth money.
You'd be surprised. Only the ones there, again, that were limited runs. And what I thought would be a lot of money was the first ever Ken. You're probably too young to remember this, but they brought out with Ken a couple of years after Barbie, and they made a big mistake because they gave him a flocked hairstyle that was actually made out of some kind of felt. But the problem was if you washed it, it fell off. And so, and of course, all these kids.
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, all
no,
the, all
Ken,
these,
when I had Ken, it was just molded
right,
on.
Right, exactly.
Know?
Well, that the manufacturer realized once they were getting complaints of the hair falling out that they'd have to go to plastic, and they did the molded thing. But if you have a felt Ken, $450.
Yeah.
They also brought
it. Because.
I was going to say that
they have a totally
hair Ken doll. This looks pretty awful. And of 1991, that brings $375. But when you're talking about Barbies, you know, you're talking maybe $5,000, like the career girl Barbie would bring you $3,400. And
well, I've been recollecting all my old Barbies that got stolen from me. And I've been recollecting like the airplane and the camper and everything that I had in the 70s.
Yeah. Well,
and it's, they go for a good piece of money.
Not as much as you think so. As far as the dolls themselves, probably the most expensive doll other than that first one was the Karl Lagerfeld Barbie. I don't know if you have that one, but that'll bring you $6,000. And part of that, again, is they only made 999 of them. You know, they stopped. And then there was a Philippe Plein 50-year anniversary Platinum Barbie. And that'll bring you $2,500. But I believe that that was...
If they're in the box, they're more, though.
Oh, of course. That's always the case. And the box can't be, in bad shape. But there was something called the Chitane Barbie doll in 2003. And that was released by FAO Schwarz. And it's so funny. I'm looking at this article on this, and they're saying FAO Schwarz with a T. I'm like, no, that's FAO Schwarz, just RZ. But anyway, $1,150.
Yeah.
It's not Schwartz. $1,150.
No.
Then Smart Silkstone Barbie, you get $2,500 for that. They crafted it from a higher grade of plastic. So, yeah, I would say your dolls probably are worth more than you paid for them, but you're not going to retire on them.
No, but the airplane and the camper and stuff are worth more money. And but I've been collecting now the ethnic Barbies, like the Native American and the one from ancient Greece and stuff like that, and keeping them in the boxes.
Oh, yeah, definitely keep them in the boxes. See, I thought they should have Trailer Trash Barbie. I thought that would have been a lot of fun. But they just weren't interested. So,
I love it.
Yeah, because I thought there were so many potentials there, and there could be so many accessories. So, I mean,
love it. Yeah. And they have witch Barbies too online for sale, but they're on eBay and they're going for about $60-$70 a piece.
Oh, yeah, they call her the Halloween Star.
Vintage
Halloween.
There's several different versions.
Yes, there are. I see them all.
And then there's one that's Samantha from Bewitched.
Oh.
Well, Barbie,
how about that? So yeah, that's a modest collection, but you're right; it's not going to go down in price.
Right. Yeah. So I want to get all those too, but I have to save up for them
and have room to put them.
Huh?
Have room to put them?
No. I don't have room to put them anywhere, but I'm going to get them anyway.
Yeah, right. But that's what I mean. But if you keep collecting, sooner or later, you have to figure out where am I going to put this stuff.
Well, Albert collects Kiss memorabilia, so, if he can keep collecting Kiss memorabilia, I can keep collecting Barbie.
Well, you can collect anything you want. You just don't want to trip over it while you're trying to get to the bathroom.
Well, that's...
Especially
that's what
at
we
night.
Do. Yeah, right. That's just what we do.
Oh, okay. All right. Well...
We just keep collecting and keep tripping over stuff.
Okay. Well, let's not tell the health department.
No, we won't. But the other thing I wanted to ask you is, I know you're not a doctor. You always have that caveat. But
yes.
I wanted to ask you, you're better than Dr. Google.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, probably about the same.
I wanted to ask you, what are the signs of cataract, that you have cataract?
The first and easiest one is your vision is worse.
Is it like blurry all the time?
Cloudy or blurry, or it may be like before you could read street signs and now you're really not reading them. Night vision, especially at night, if you're suddenly getting like halos at night or glare around things with light. But here's my favorite. You can wind up with double vision, and that, you know, in glasses, you just put prisms in it and that'll correct it. But you'll see the images separately. But I would say...
I have one eye. Just my right eye is blurry all the time.
Okay. Well, firstly, I would not fool around with your eyes. I flat out would never fool around with your eyes. See somebody. Find out what that is. Because when you're saying blurry vision, the possibilities are seemingly endless on that.
Because I rub it. It just seems like it's like I have pink eye all the time. It's like it feels like there's mucus or something in there, or blurry or something in there. But
yeah, and you know, eyes are funny. It can be everything from something, like you say, something in there, to something very serious that isn't even eye related. So I would never fool around with that. And I could give you a whole list of things it could possibly be, but what I really want is you to see somebody. And initially, it doesn't even have to be an ophthalmologist. Ultimately, if you have a problem, it will be an ophthalmologist. But initially, even a good optometrist will be able to at least dilate your eyes, look in there, and see what's going on.
Okay, because what is the, like, if it is cataracts, what is the surgery?
Cataract and gallbladder are probably the two most common surgeries in America every year. I mean,
which I've already had the gallbladder.
So what I'm saying, this is very, very, very common. And
you have to have a needle in your eye?
Well, no, you don't need to worry about any of that, believe me. And there are so many.
No, I'm not good with needles.
You don't have to worry about this. Trust me. And there are many ways that they're doing it. What they're doing is they're removing the lens and they're replacing it. And, you can have a replacement lens in a number of different ways as far as that goes. But for most people, there's no pain involved. What I would say, I guarantee you, in your sphere of influence and friends in Philadelphia area, you know people who've had the surgery. And probably had it in the last couple of years. And so...
No, I don't. I knew my mother's friends had them, but...
Well, that was probably a long time ago.
But they're all passed away now.
Right. Well, it's very common, but there's a few different ways to do it and a few different lenses to choose from. Insurance won't necessarily pay for all of the options, but there are many ways to do this. And especially since the vision correction that they do, laser vision correction, that really has caused, in some ways, some advances in cataract surgery.
Laser sounds good.
Well, it would be that, but it's a question of what and how. It would be that. There's a number of ways, but the common ones. I would not worry about this.
And Medicare would probably pay.
Medicare
does
pay for it. They absolutely pay for it, but they pay for the basic lens replacement. They don't pay for anything fancy.
Oh, okay.
So it depends on what you wanted to do. If you wanted something fancy, that could cost you. But no, Medicare will do the basic without a problem. And you can decide. You can decide on the basic how you want it corrected. Meaning, some people are saying, I don't really want it corrected for great distance vision because then I won't see anything close up. Well, if that's the case, and some other people might say, well, I really just don't want to see with glasses when I'm looking at a distance. I don't mind wearing readers, or something in the middle. So they can set all of that. If you're having two eyes done, you can do monovision, meaning you set one for distance and one for close up. And when I wore contact lenses, that's always the way I did it. One of my eyes I'd put as absolute perfect distance and the other one as extreme close-up. And the only thing with that is you have to learn which is your dominant eye. Because the first time I tried that a zillion years ago, what happened was they used my right eye as dominant. And I couldn't get used to it at all. Then I said, let me try with my left eye as dominant. And I was used to it in 24 hours.
Okay.
So you have to know what your dominant eye is. But if you do know that, then that's a possibility of something that, you know, that allow you to see both close and far. And that would not be any additional cost. But what you want to do is find somebody who has done a ton of these, because that's usually the guy to go to. Somebody who is. How is your vision normally, other than it being cloudy now? Are you very nearsighted?
Well, I'm nearsighted. I drive, and I need readers too.
All right. How nearsighted are you?
Really nearsighted.
Do you know what your powers are?
No, I don't.
Okay, well. When you take your glasses off.
I haven't driven in a while.
When you take your glasses off and you're in the shower, can you see your feet?
Yes.
Okay, you're not nearsighted. In the real sense. No. I
can't see a stop sign.
Fine. But you're
50 feet.
Right. But
me.
You're able to walk to the bathroom without glasses.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is, when people are nearsighted to the extent that literally they'll walk into a wall without glasses, you know, when we're talking about the 12 powers and the 13 powers
I'm not that nearsighted.
When you're that nearsighted, I worry, because there's always a remote possibility of detaching retinas after these surgeries. It's very remote. I wouldn't worry about it. But in people who are extremely nearsighted, that number goes up. And so you don't have that to worry about.
Okay, good.
But you can go online. Don't be afraid of this. And look, there are even videos. I know there's ophthalmologists who have on YouTube who actually show it and talk about it and all the pros and cons and different types. So, you can sit there for hours and see all this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guarantee you. You'll know more about it than you want to. But of all the things you would need to worry about, this should be near the bottom of your list when it comes to anything medical. But it might not be a cataract. So I'm more concerned that you find out what it is.
Okay, cool.
So report back.
I will. Thank you very much for your advice.
All right. And if you can't find anybody, if you're saying, I just can't find anybody, you can always go to a lens crafters or one of those. They usually have an independent optometrist right there, and that's good enough to at least diagnose it.
Okay, I will. Thank you.
Right. Sure thing. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, so, ultimately, I would say, depending on what it is, you're going to want an ophthalmologist and somebody good. But to find out initially, well, at least see somebody. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888 Raleigh. And as I always say, if you listen to the show, you're a radio lover. You probably couldn't get through it if you weren't. And if you are, you probably know all about the Sea Crane Company, because Bob Crane years ago was as disgusted at the lousy reception on modern-day radios as the rest of us were. And he said, I can do better. And boy, has he. Every one of his radios is unique in that it just has unbeatable AM and FM reception, both. And a number of them have a lot of features. And one of the neat ones, I carry this in my purse, the CC Pocket. And it can be carried in your pocket because it's lightweight and all that. And it is one of the most popular pocket radios on the market today, not only because of its tremendous reception, and it's crisp, clear audio. When you look at the small size of the speaker, it really is good. Now, you can obviously use earbuds and get amazing quality, but even the, and that's included, I think. They are. I just looked that up to make sure. They do include the CC earbuds, so that's amazing quality. But even the speaker alone, which is what I usually listen to, sounds pretty darn good. But what's neat about it is it's just like the old transistor radios you used to have years ago, except five memory buttons, so you can instantly select your favorite station. It's got a digital readout, so that's really nice. It also makes a great emergency radio because NOAA weather and the weather band, and a lighted dial too, which is nice. And it's lightweight, it's durable, and that's important to me because I'm very hard on my toys. And I'll tell you what, the CC Pocket is still playing amazingly so. But a display light, there's a sleep timer, a clock, and an alarm. You get a little belt clip and a headphone jack and all that. And they've also got an FM antenna, a 30-inch wire included. And so you can tune, and this is nice, because one of the things about digital radios is that, you know, if you're using one that's set for America, 10 kilohertz spacing, you know, you go to Europe or something, it's 9 kilohertz spacing, you can't hear anything. Well, the tuning will work in 1 kilohertz increments, but it'll also quickly work in 9 kilohertz increment or 10. So wherever you are, you'll listen to the AM portion of this radio. It runs about 80 hours on a couple of AA's, and with a speaker. If you're just using earbuds, it'll last about 100 hours. It's really neat. CCRadio.com, CCRadio.com. You go ahead and take a look at it in the catalog. Oh, let me tell you that this week, Sea Crane is offering free standard shipping on the Pocket Radio, but supplies are limited. So if you've wanted one and didn't want to pay for shipping, this is the time to order them. Now, if you can't go online for some reason, call them. 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. It's the Sea Crane Company. If you can go online, read all about it at ccradio.com. But order this week, get that free standard shipping. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
Sit yourself down and think of what you'd like to do today. Then take a look around, and if the sky kind of looks a little gray, just take a hook on a dream. Watch your cares all start running, your smiles won't stop coming when you take a mind excursion. It's just a slight diversion. You may come out of
WGN. I'm Molly James. Jerry Naylor on Capitol in 1970, redoing Anders and Poncia, and it was Sonny Knight who produced that. All right, plenty to talk about for the next 2 hours right here with you on WGN Radio.
If you want this love of mine, treat me gentle, treat me kind. Don't be mean and don't be bad, and you get the truest love that you ever had. If you want my lips to kiss, cuddle close and don't resist. Loving you is all I crave, and if you let me, pretty baby, I'll be your slave. If you want this love of mine, baby, come on and get it. If you should fall in love with me, I'll bet you'll never regret it. Not a thing I wouldn't do, I'd do anything just for you. Just let me know that you're really mine, because I wanna love you till the end of time.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, I mentioned that Sonny Knight had produced that Jerry Naylor record. I thought, oh yeah, I want to hear some Sonny Knight. So that 1964 on Aura. He was probably best known for his 1966 hit Confidential, but I thought, man, as on Aura, that's just terrific. Now, the next thing is, I'm not sure. Yeah, I wanted to play it anyway because I like Sonny Knight. That is the same Sonny Knight. I think the guy who produced for Columbia was also head of A&R for Mira. But our Sonny Knight that I just played, who did Confidential, what a great record. Aura was an interesting little label, and that was a subsidiary of World Pacific, which was a subsidiary of Liberty. So, yeah, so not the same Sonny Knight, but it prompted me to play a fave anyway. So that's what it's all about. 888-876-5593. Let's see what we got here. I believe Fran and Austin's got some requests. So what you got for me, Fran?
Hey, Raleigh. Well, I think the name of this song is Strange I Know by the Marvelettes.
Of course it is. Big hit.
I wasn't sure of the title. That was
Yeah, of course. What a wonderful song.
And also Pretty Words by the Shirelles.
Okay. Shirelles. All right.
And anything that you wouldn't mind playing by the Cookies. I love Gene Earle's voice.
Yeah, Earl Jean. Yeah, I do. I do too, actually. Like Girls Grow Up Faster Than Boys Do. And
oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. And probably the closest they had to a hit that wasn't a hit. Because I think some of their other stuff actually did fairly well in the charts. And I think one of their last things was quote The Old Crowd. I don't know if it's on this computer or not, but you probably haven't heard it. So if it is, I'll play that.
Oh, okay. That sounds great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Happy to.
So.
Yeah, let's see.
Anyway.
I found it. Okay, The Old Crowd. That's what you're going to hear, The Old Crowd. Okay.
All right, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, good deal. Good to hear from you. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate
Bye.
It. So yeah, and that's one they never play by the Cookies, but I don't know why. There's so much I don't know. We've got Marianne in Chicago. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh, how you doing?
All right, how about yourself?
Okay, how's your throat thing going?
Well, we don't want to talk. Let's just leave it there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
so.
I'm not burying any headlines tonight.
Okay, good.
But in case Leah's listening.
She is.
I have my cataract surgery set up for May 16th.
All right.
They do put you in a twilight because I was freaking out.
Yeah, right. It's not bad.
No, and actually you have to go for a pre-surgery test, but they said it's minimal.
Well, you want to do that. They want to make sure that things are looking good in your eye and your retina and all that kind of stuff. So
well,
that,
no, but I mean like before the surgery, I have to go to my GP.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, sure you do.
But it won't be like last time. They don't have to do a ECG.
No, and that's no big deal if they do. So it's just sort of almost defensive medicine, you know, that they know your doctor has said, yeah, you're up to it.
Yeah, to be knocked out, but
well, you won't be fully knocked out.
Yeah, you're in a twilight.
Yeah,
but
remember, people pay big money for this.
Well, you know, when you were talking about cataract surgery and maybe a retina problem. Well, I've got the reverse.
Okay.
The retina problem caused the cataract.
Well, that happens. They're
right. They told me it would happen.
Right. They're relatives. Sure.
But and the difference is when my retina started to go out, I saw black.
Right.
Now with the cataract, the only way I can describe it is like, okay, I wear glasses. It's like somebody put Vaseline on one of the lenses of my glass.
Right, that's a common way to. Yeah, I've heard that description. Sure, it's basically blurry. There's nothing clear about it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'll be having that on the 16th, and like you had said, he said, after what I've been through, the cataract is the least of my worries.
It is
because, like, if you let that retina become detached for too long, your eyeball
dies. Yeah, no, you're over. You're absolutely over. I was amazed you waited as long as you did.
I didn't wait. I had no choice.
No. That's still waiting. I mean, if it were me, I'd have called an ambulance. I'd have called anybody. I'd have been there in 22 minutes.
Yeah, well, the doctor wasn't very happy when I told him how long they
made
me
wait. Well, that's what I'm saying. You don't say you don't have any choice. When it's, as far as I'm concerned, that's a matter of life and death.
And I called every other day to see if there was a cancellation.
Yeah, but
I said, okay, now.
I wouldn't even do that. I would just show up.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And then the bad part was when he sent me to the retina guy, I get there and they say, oh, we don't have you on the list.
Yeah, well.
They want my confidence level down.
Oh, absolutely. No, any time in the future, if you think you've got detaching retinas, if you get some of those symptoms, you immediately get to the hospital. I don't care how you get there.
Well, to go to the hospital to the ER would be a waste of time because you wait forever because you're not bleeding, you don't have chest pains, you're not having a baby, and then 6 hours later, they hand you a referral card.
Well, then what you need to do is now that you know you might have this problem, is to find out what you can do in an emergency.
Yeah, well, what I'm going to ask my ophthalmologist if something like this happens, I'm going to just show up here.
Well, no, probably he should have an emergency number that you can call.
No, when you call the number, you go through an answering thing, and it's like, if this is an emergency, dial 911.
Yeah, right, I know. Well, they all say that because they're against
defensive. Yeah, but, you know, with your eye, I mean, unless your eyeball's hanging out of the socket.
I'd claim it. If that's what it took, that's what I'd say. It's rolling across the room. I'll try to get it.
But, I mean, other than that, why would you call 911?
Well,
there's nothing they can really
like I say,
do
that's defensive medicine. They're telling you that so that later, if there's a lawsuit, they say, well, we told her to call 911.
Yeah,
so
well.
That's all it is. But, yeah, I think you should have a relationship with your doctor where you just say that, hey, this is what happened last time. This is how long it took. Now, if it happens again, what do I do? What are the magic words? Who do I call?
Yeah, well, this doctor now that's going to do the cataract, I like him a lot.
Well, yeah, I don't care about his personality and how well you like him. You want to make sure that he'll give you that number and tell you what the magic words are.
Right, and then one of my girlfriends from high school worked for a top ophthalmologist for many, many, many years.
Uh-huh.
And then the guy I'm seeing, she had worked for him also.
Okay.
And I can see the difference in bedside manners mm-hmm. between that doctor and the retina doctor.
Well, you don't want a doctor who's going to put you off when you have detaching retinas. I mean, I'd fire him.
Exactly.
Just for that.
He did not understand right. why when he said, "Well, now you have a cataract," why I was so disappointed.
Right. Well, anyway.
I told him.
Good news, it doesn't matter anymore. You got a new guy you like.
Well, yeah. And I told him, if I have more retina problems, do not send me back to that doctor.
Yeah.
I said he didn't like me and I didn't like him.
Yeah.
And he was more than happy to hand me back to you.
Right, exactly. In fact, ask him for a referral right now, somebody you can see when you're not having a problem, so you foster a relationship.
And that reminds me, for some reason, I've got an appointment coming up in the next couple of weeks with the retina doctor, and I don't see why I have to go.
You don't have to go if you don't want to, but you
I'm
might.
I'm going
to
cancel it
right.
because
right.
he said he couldn't tell anything until the cat... With the cataract there. Okay,
yeah.
The cataract's not being removed till May.
I would cancel it, and I would ask your cataract guy for a referral of somebody else.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, absolutely do that. But don't wait.
No.
All right. Good deal. You had a request. I know.
Yeah. Oh, and Mr. Drew Peterson was back on the news today.
Drew was? Okay.
Yeah.
And what's the latest?
it has to do with that lawyer that wants to say what he confided in him.
Uh-huh. Yes, right, who is trying to be able to breach attorney-client privilege.
Right, and then I forgot that he was in trouble also for putting a hit out on the state's attorney that prosecuted him.
So what was the upshot today?
I guess the guy he went to bump off this guy squealed on him.
Well, no. I mean, why was there a trial today?
There is no trial.
Oh.
It's just putting his face out in there.
Oh, I see. All right.
And then bringing up the fact that the lawyer wants to talk.
What I had heard was that a judge appointed a special prosecutor today to handle the attorney claims. We'll see.
Yeah,
and said,
they put a gag order, I think, on that attorney.
Yes, they did. And apparently, did he violate it? Whatever. So now, apparently, there will be some type of a special prosecutor or whatever. So yeah, his public defender, Drew's public defender, was asking to have his former attorney held in contempt of court for violating the gag order. So that was the deal today.
And then it was a great day in Chicago for Chicago.
How so?
Well, in my opinion, they found that little punk guilty of killing that officer Ella French.
Oh yeah.
And paralyzing her partner, and they had it on body cam. He shot that man four times while he was laying on the ground.
Yeah. Imante Morgan. Yeah.
Yep. And they found him guilty
story.
And I was like, good.
Yeah, I understand that, but these stories always leave me so cold when I realize that doesn't bring back the victim, and I sure wish...
Nobody can't do it to anybody else.
Well, no. He won't. That's true. That's true about that. Well, except maybe somebody in prison. Who knows? Well, we'll see. All right, so good
deal.
Okay,
I'll get to my request.
Yes, what is it?
Okay, it's a song you played a while back.
Well, then I have it, at least. What is it?
And the story behind it is, when you played it, I was like, oh my God, I was in heaven. And I was with one of my girlfriends the next day who loves doo-wop, R&B, and everything, and you had played My Little Red Book.
That's what you want to hear?
Yeah, because she pulled it up on her phone while we were in the car, and we were both dancing and singing to it, and unfortunately, she's no longer with us.
Oh, well, that's a shame.
Yeah, I had to find out through a police to go and do a check on her.
Oh, no.
And I felt horrible because I was the last one to hear from her.
Oh.
She had texted me, and I said, what's going on? She said, I'm just laying down. She says, I'm getting over COVID because her boyfriend had brought COVID home from work. And he went down to the downstairs area and lived there, and she was staying upstairs so they wouldn't reinfect each other. And I said, how are you feeling now? And she said, okay. And then the next day she wasn't answering. And I called the police to do a well-being check, and they had her boyfriend call me to tell me she had passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
And the worst part was she was only 57.
Oh, Yeah, you hate to hear that. But hopefully...
And she was like my ride or die. Every time we went somewhere, she'd get my walker out, help me in and out of places. When we went to the pool, she made sure nobody got rough with me.
Yeah.
And she liked that song so much. So I was
wondering, let me ask you, though, because, you know, are you talking about the one by Love or are you talking about the one by the Drifters? They're two completely different songs.
Might have been Love. I just got out my little red
book. That's Love. All right. Yes, the Drifters was You're More Than a Number in My Little Red Book. All right. So, all right, Love. I'll play you Love next. I don't know that anybody has ever requested a Love song before, but there you are, and you'll hear it.
Okay, and good luck at the dentist.
Oh, yeah. It'll be a saga. Maybe it'll be fun. I'll let you know.
Oh, yeah. Right. Are you laughing at?
No, I don't. I go straight. All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Nobody ever said fun and dentist in the same sentence before.
There you are. So, okay. All right, 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH on WGN Radio.
Goodbye. I thumbed right through my little red book. I wasn't gonna sit and cry. And I went from A to Z. I took out every pretty girl in town. They danced with me. And as I held them, all I did was talk about you. Hear your name and I start to cry. There's just no getting over you. Ever replace your charms. And each girl in my little red book knows you're the one I'm thinking of. Oh, won't you please come back? Without your precious love, I can't go on. Where can love be? I need you so much. All I did was talk about you. Hear your name and I start to cry. There's just no getting over.
WGN Radio, I'm Molly James. Believe it or not, Bacharach David wrote that. That's right, Burt Bacharach and Hal David wrote My Little Red Book. And Jack Holzman produced it, so it was on Elektra, you can guess that. But the interesting thing about Love, who were formed in mid-60s in Los Angeles, is that they influenced the Doors. And the Doors admitted it. Well, I guess there's some similarity, I don't know. But in any event, that is kind of a medley of their pop hit. But... They certainly released a number of other things, but I can't think of anything that would have been a hit by them. Although Arthur Lee left them and then continued performing under the name of Love all over the place. But I don't think they had other hits. But anyway, there it is, My Little Red Book, Bacharach David. Not one of their finer moments, but there you have it. All right, Pete is a first-time caller. All right, Pete in Reed's Landing, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, great to be on the radio. Just listening as I'm driving up US 61 from Winona, Minnesota up to Lake City. And
thank you.
Beautiful day up here. And was thinking some Rosemary Clooney. I'm not real familiar with all her songs. I just like her voice.
Oh, I loved her. I loved her. Now, of course, if you're talking about big hits, probably the one that she didn't want to record was her biggest, which was Come Out of My House. And that was 1950. But there's one that I have by her that I just love her version of it, and that's Miss Otis Regrets. Have you ever heard it?
I don't know, but you can play. I said to the guy, I said, play whatever she likes to play. Right. I was thinking maybe Blues of the Night because it is night, but if you got a better song, you play it because you're more of an expert on this than I am. But I've been just enjoying the conversation as I'm driving, keeping me awake and paying attention.
Well, you're an expert on what you like, so if you like Blues in the Night, I'll try that, but I'll also play Miss Otis Regrets so you get to hear it.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate thanks for that. Calling. I appreciate it.
Yep.
All right. So, 888-876-5593 will take us to John, and John is in Covington, Kentucky. Speaking of the Cloonies, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh, every time the subject comes up of Barbie, I have to chuckle because It was a day after Thanksgiving back in 1998, and I was at Churchill Downs, and I had a nice trifecta for after taxes. I got back $1,700.
This is great, so, but hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay right where you are. I blew the news again.
All right.
So we'll pick it up right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
My mama done told me when I was in pigtails. My mama done told me, hun, a man's gonna sweet talk and give you the big eye. But when the sweet talking's done, a man is a two-faced, a worrisome thing who'll leave you to sing the blues in the night. Now the rains are falling, hear the trains are calling. Ahooey, ahooey, clickety-clack, echoing back the blues in the night. The evening breeze will start.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. So there it is for Pete, Blues in the Night, Rosemary Clooney. Interesting song. It was written for a movie, and the movie was going to be called Hot Nocturne, but they released it finally as Blues in the Night. And the guy singing it in the film is William Gillespie. Johnny Mercer and Harold Arlen wrote it, and a number of people did that, you know, no matter who it was. And, gosh, I guess Artie Shaw had the first hit in 1941. And then in the early 40s, there were a lot of Woody Herman, too. And then Dinah Shore, 1942 or so, and Jimmy Lunsford and Cab Calloway and Benny Goodman, you name it. But Rosie Clooney did that in 1952. And it was interesting that it lasted for 2 weeks on the chart, peaking at number 29. And it, technically, it was the first version to reach the Billboard magazine charts by virtue of how the charts had been done and what had changed it. But Joe Stafford did it a few times. And Tommy Dorsey, in fact, I think it was Joe Stafford singing with Tommy Dorsey, but Paul Weston, there were a number of people have done that, and Ray Charles in the 70s. So it's an absolute classic. But I'm going to play Miss Otis Regrets, because Pete hasn't heard it, and that actually was redone on a CD called Girl Singer, which was great, but I'll play the original from 1964, and that was a fine effort of Rosie Clooney's as well. All right, so 888-876-5593, and we were talking with John in Covington, where I left him as he was rudely interrupted by the news, and we're back.
Okay, so as I say every time I hear Barbie come up, I have to chuckle because, as I told you, I was at Churchill the day after Thanksgiving back in 1998, and I hit a nice trifecta, and after taxes, I got $1,700. Well, now, as long as it's under $5,000, they'll just pay you.
Right.
You still have to pay taxes, but it was different then. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway, so I get home, I give the wife $800, I keep $800, and then the other $100, we went to the Boathouse, my favorite restaurant. Anyway, so that weekend, my son and I, we went to the library, and they have it's a reference book called The Value Line.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. Right. Anyway, so I'm looking up a stock to buy. I'm going to take this $800, and I'm just, going to play with it a little bit. Anyway, so they've got strong buy recommendation on Mattel because of Barbie's 40th birthday. Oh, a strong buy. I held that thing for 18 months, and I lost $350.
Oh, geez.
It's It's just funny. It's just a chuckle.
Yeah.
But yeah, that really did happen.
Yeah, well,
thank you, Raleigh.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that kind of tells you all you need to know about those analysts. If they're figuring,
that
Barbie's 40th anniversary is going to change the finances of a company, oh, I don't know what they're drinking, but I probably want some of that.
Well, I fell for it.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Oh, I want to mention something that's coming up in Chicago, actually. Patrick Russo, who cuts my hair, actually, does a benefit show, and he'd done it for years, and then it stopped for several years, but it's coming back, and it's Who's That Girl? And it's going to be in Chicago at benefits Howard Brown Health, and so you can find out about it if you want, but a number of people are going to be on Who's That Girl? But it's back, so if you liked it before, I bet you'll like it again. It's coming up on Saturday, May 18th, and WTG Chicago, WTG, like Who's That Girl? Chicago.com. You can read all about it, and it's a cross show. So in the same vein as all the wonderful cross dressers that we know over the years, and so I think you'll enjoy it. So yeah, and if you're a fan of R&B, used to be so common in all the minstrel shows, they would always have a cross dressing performer, and then that went away a long time ago. But and clubs like the Dewdrop Inn in New Orleans, just terrific. So in that vein, Patrick and Who's That Girl coming up on May 18th. I wish I was there to see it, actually. So 888-876-5593. Before we get to Stephanie and Madison, I want to talk a little bit more about Blues in the Night, because it was interesting. Like I say, it was written for this movie. William Gillespie sung it, and then, you know, Artie Shaw and all that. But it turns out that after Gillespie did it in the movie, it was nominated for an Academy Award, and everybody thought, well, either that's going to win or Chattanooga Choo Choo is going to win. And so Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein decided to sit it out because they wrote The Last Time I Saw Paris, and that was, you know, one of seven other nominees, and they thought, no way. Well, anyway, you know what happened. Last Time in Paris won. But, yeah, I don't think it had the longevity, anyway, of Blues in the Night. So, Stephanie in Madison, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Oh, thank you very, very much, Raleigh. I appreciate it. I've got my AirPods in. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Good. Great. I can hear you, too. Yeah, I really enjoyed hearing Kimberly. I'll tell you, people, especially old, those of us that are older, really, it behooves you to learn the technology, especially if you are blind or visually impaired. Take your time with it. There's a wonderful accessible technology person that works at the Wisconsin Council of the Blind and Visually Impaired. And, you know, I used to kind of pride myself on being a fast learner, but, you know, actually learning, taking it at a slower pace and really making sure you're relaxed and not anxious and trying too hard, it stays with you, you know, it's a, it's like learning to learn. So anyway, but there's a couple of things I wanted to mention. I got a scare because there's a man named Bob Hale that invented some type of device or instrument that musicians use, and he died.
Yeah.
He was 83. I don't know what, didn't catch what the instrument was. It was like a talk box or something. But at first I thought, well, you know, my husband and I have gotten to know Bob
Hale.
You thought
it was the disc jockey.
I don't know if it was. It wasn't the disc jockey from WLS, the guy that was.
No,
it was another guy. But
yes,
at first I heard the name, I'm like, oh, no. Because we've gotten to know him, and he was the host for the 1959 concert in Clear Lake, that Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and just a great guy, and I hope he's doing okay. But do you know about the other one, do you know what this person invented at all?
I know that Bob Hale, the baritone, died, but that's been almost a year now. But I think I know exactly who you're talking about. I did know, but I'd have to look it up to tell you the truth.
That's okay. I just also wanted to make a request.
Wait a minute. Hang on a minute. Well, that would be fine
okay,
if it were Thursday. All right. Sorry about that. Yeah. So yeah, you wanted to make a request.
I'd love to make a request. Brenda Holloway, every little bit.
Oh,
hurts.
Yeah.
I love.
Yeah, I want to find a version that wasn't ruined by the Motown reissues.
I
want to find the 45 version. Yeah, that's the one that counts. So yes, indeed. So I'm looking all these different Bob Hales who invented all sorts of stuff, and too common a name, I'm afraid. So I'll have to keep looking.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So Brenda Holloway, Every Little Bit Hurts. Okay.
Yes.
We'll do it.
Please.
Okay.
I love it. I got prompted because I heard you. Was it Fran that was doing the lyric quiz?
Yes.
Yes. And I heard, I'll do Wrong for You. And I'm like, Every Little Bit Hurts. It's like absolutely one of my favorite songs.
Yeah. Well, we will play it.
Oh, I love it. Also, Julie London did... Blues in the Night.
Yes.
She also sang that song.
You know, everybody, yes. I'd say, I haven't looked it up on secondhand songs, but I would think there's like 300 versions. Let me do that right now.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, because that's one of those songs. But let's see, secondhand songs, Blues in the Night, let's see what we get. Yes, come on. Come for me. All right, Johnny Mercer and Harold Arlen, here we go. All right, let's click on this. And 309 known versions by them.
So, oh, wow.
309. So I would say, everybody you can think of, including Jesse Belvin. You know, I mean, everybody did that.
Oh, really? Jesse Belvin did
that? Yes,
wow.
Absolutely. Yes.
Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah.
Well, I love Johnny Mercer. I do. I love his singing. And I love the songs that he's written. Also Harold Arlen. I love the standards, the American Songbook. I really do.
Yeah.
Yes.
But Dr. John did it too, by the way.
Oh man, that would be a little strange.
Right. But, well, no, it's actually not as strange as some of them. Buddy Guy did a medley of Cheaper to Keeper and Blues in the Night, which is memorable. So there's a number of people. Yeah, there was one Johnny Taylor version that I used one of the guitar licks in it for going into commercial intros, so, you know, breaks and stuff. So that's what I remember from it more than anything. So, yes. All right.
Hey. All right. Oh, hey, I'll be listening, and I'll be getting tired, and I'll say, oh, the show's going to end pretty soon, so I'm glad I got a chance to call
in. Yeah, me too,
and there's
another hour of it after this, so you absolutely did. But, yeah, I'll find the Johnny Taylor version of Blues in the Night, like I say, because I played that for years, part of it. So.
Oh, that would be good.
Okay, good deal. I'll do it.
All right, my dear. You take good care.
You too.
All right.
So 888-876-5593. We'll talk to Bill in Chicago and you too. And yeah, Rosie Clooney doing Minnesota's Regrets in 1964. Fine song coming up on WGN Radio.
Minnesota's Regrets, she's unable to lunch today. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. She is sorry to be delayed, but last evening down in Lover's Lane she strayed. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. When she woke up and found that her dream of love was gone, madam, she ran to the man who had led her so far astray. And from under her velvet gown she drew a gun and shot her lover down. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. When the mob came and got her and dragged her from the jail, madam, they strung her up on that old willow across the way. And the moment before she died, she lifted up her lovely head and cried, madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. And yeah, that's from the Thanks for Nothing album, Rosemary Clooney in 1964. And like I say, she redid it on Girl Singer. And I'm not sure, I may even like that version better. So maybe we'll play that too. But that's another old song, first recorded in 1934 and released. And everybody did that, whether it's the Mills Brothers or Martha Ray, you name it. Jim Lowe, the disc jockey in New York, did that. And of course, Rosie Clooney in 64, and then later again on her Girl Singer album, which I thought was a pretty nice version of that, but a lot of people, I think, hundreds of versions of that. So 150, according to Secondhand Songs, 150 versions, and Cole Porter wrote it. So 888-876-5593, and let us talk to Bill in Chicago. What's coming up, Bill?
Yeah, I was just going to tell you, you were talking to the lady a while ago in Chicago about doing a cataract surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to tell people nowadays, they do cataract surgery, they go in and they do it and they walk out that same day.
Right, of course.
Well, I had one done in 1955.
Very different.
And that's when they put you totally under.
Yeah.
They had to open the eye up, and I had to lay on my back for a week. With my hands tied down, sandbags on each side of my head, one on my forehead, and I had to lay that way for a week, and it was fed liquids only. And after the week, I was able to sit up, not strain or anything.
Yeah.
And I had to take, I went home 2 weeks later from the hospital, and I had to take a laxative because You with a cataract surgery back then, you couldn't even strain if you was constipated.
Oh, I know.
The people come in now, it's like day and night. I mean,
absolutely, and it's very, very simple now. Not to say that nothing can happen; things can, but for the most
part, something
can
happen.
Most of the time, it's phacoemulsification, and that's an ultrasound that does that. And then it used to be like when you were doing it in 55, they also wanted people to wait further because if the cataract was riper, it was easier to remove.
It had to be a certain ripeness.
Not anymore. Anymore at all. So
they can take them off any way. But,
absolutely, you know. And it's one of those things. As long as there have been human beings on the planet, there have been cataracts. So
it's just a thing. The lens either physically or something. It just clouds over.
Sure.
I mean, if you say...
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Okay. Stay where you are, because it's time for the news and more on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. And yes, the Cookies, Earl Jean on lead. It was a Goffin King tune. It was a B-side, actually. The last 45 they released on Dimension, The Old Crowd. All right, that's for Fran. And there'll be more for Fran coming up. I was talking to Bill in Chicago about cataract surgery, and I'm so glad he brought up the evolution of that, not what you went through in 1950. But just like I say, cataracts are one of the oldest known things on the planet. It's hard for me to believe, but when you look at the history of this, like 600 BC or whatever, basically they were inadvertently blinding people trying to do this. But it really didn't improve all that much. So when you did it, was it something called ICCE?
I think it was. I don't remember what it was because I was the only one.
There's a large incision.
Yeah, it was a full big incision.
Yeah, it was.
Less,
right.
They more or less almost removed the eye from the socket
and
make an incision go into the top, and then they put it back in, whether they stitch it and put it back in.
Right, and you know, there was so much retinal detachment or macular swelling.
Oh yeah, they could have done all kinds. Well, of course, I've had a vision problem ever since I've been 5 years old. When I went to preschool exam, and they covered my right eye and said which way the east point, and I read the line all the way down.
Right.
And they covered my left eye, and I said, "Well, turn the lights back on."
Uh-oh.
There was no vision in my right eye, and my parents, it looked normal, and they never knew. Well, anyway, I doctored, and at the Indiana University Medical Center, I finally was admitted there in 1949. They diagnosed it, and my condition is I've lost my vision now about 5 years ago altogether. But I was able to drive a tractor and stuff on the farm after the cataract surgery. But if you want to really look at something interesting, the condition I have, I'll give you the short form, is VKH.
Uh-huh.
I want the whole long technical name is Voigt-Koyanagi-Hirata syndrome.
Wow.
But VKH is a short. And in 1949, when I was diagnosed with it, I was the only known Caucasian in the United States because it's an Oriental disease.
You know,
and they don't know how I ever caught it.
I've only heard it because I think it's some kind of a cousin to uveitis.
Yeah, it is. You get uveitis, and you can get glaucoma and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, because that's the only reason I know, because I have uveitis, right. And that was one of the things I mentioned, but I never, thank God, had it. So.
Right. But anyway, we mentioned cataracts. If you live long enough, you'd eventually get cataracts.
Yes, absolutely. That's 100% true. And that's
right. In other words, you might have to live to be 120, but you eventually get cataracts.
But you will eventually. That's absolutely true. And to think that ICCE, what you went through, that was the standard, really, until pretty much the end of the 60s. And in some.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I had one. That was on my right eye, and then I had one done on my left eye in 69. And that was the first time the same eye doctor I'd been doctored with ever since 1949. Yeah.
Right.
And I've stayed with him until in the 80s. He retired. But in 69, he did a cataract surgery on my left eye. And
that was done,
as they called it, outpatient then. I went in the night before.
Right.
They took you into surgery. They did this, pretty much the same thing. Not quite as bad. But I went home that night.
So it wasn't phacoemulsification because that came in by the end of the 60s.
Right. But I had to, I had to be careful. I couldn't bend over. I couldn't lift anything.
Right.
I couldn't do anything like that. But in other words, I was only in the hospital overnight because they wanted to do the surgery early in the morning instead of getting up. Because I lived 110 miles from where I saw the eye doctor in Indianapolis.
They still do a lot of phaco, although I guess in the early 2000s, femto came in, the femtosecond laser. I really think that LASIK surgery probably led to the growth in that. But today it's so funny because, when you were doing this was absolutely vision-threatening. And now...
Oh, yeah, right. In fact, this experiment was, the surgery on my right eye was experimental to begin with. Because it developed a cataract over the period of, say, age 5 when I had it, till 55, when 1955, when they took the cataract off. Well, in that 10-year period, the cataract developed, and they said, well, you want to give it a try. Maybe it'll work, maybe it won't work. So, you know, between myself and my parents, we said, yeah, I'll give it a shot, see what happens. Because I was actually a guinea pig, because I went through all kinds of treatments to try to figure out how to stop this, the disease, and control things. Like, when I was 9 years old, I used to go once a week to the local hospital where I lived there in Indiana, and I would take typhoid injections and run a typhoid fever up to 105 for a day, and then they give me an injection and they tell me they might burn it out. I did all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. The human guinea pigs. I know all about that. I gave up on that a long, long time ago. But, yeah.
Right. Well, I don't. Like I say, I've pretty much lost the vision I had about 5 years ago. But I can, I mean, it didn't affect me. I still get around. I still go to places, do things.
Sure.
But it's just one of those things. He's talking about cataract and saying, man, they're simple nowadays.
Well, that's right.
Well, it's not simple, but I mean, it's a simple procedure.
It absolutely is. The success rate is amazing on it. I mean, again, there's still complications potentially with it, with anybody, but for the most part, it's a walk in the park surgery. But I know with uveitis, which they treat with steroids, you know, you use those prednisone eye drops.
Then,
you know, when you first get it, they make you sign that, you know, it'll give you cataracts. She's like, okay.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Because I know the, I kept the pharmacy in business.
Right. Oh, I still have some of the bottles around. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm glad you survived it and you're still here to talk about it. But compared to today, that was grueling.
Oh, yeah. I'm 84 years old.
Yeah,
now,
that was just grueling. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, good deal. Good to talk to you.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, phaco is probably the most commonly done cataract surgery now, but I'd say the femto laser is really, really moving up. And but either way, it's certainly not like what Bill experienced, that's for sure. 888-876-5593. We get to Laura in Willowbrook. What's up, Laura?
Hey, Raleigh.
Hey, Laura, what's happening?
Not too much, but, you know, I hear everybody ask you questions about music and request songs, and I usually don't ask you about music, and I usually don't request a song, so if you don't mind, I just wanted to talk Dionne Warwick for a minute.
All right.
Don't know if you're a fan or not a fan.
Depends on the song.
Well, I was thinking just the first one that came to mind was Do You Know the Way to San Jose, but I really like most of her stuff.
Okay. I think if I had to pick one record by her that I like better than any of the others, it's Who's Gonna Love Me.
Okay, well, if you'd play that someday,
I'd appreciate it. And maybe you haven't heard it.
Okay, and I think I'm probably not have. And I'm just curious too. Do you have any backstories about her? Or how did she get started? I really don't know anything about her other than she's not one of those belters, you know, like you can hear her from the back of the balcony to the front of the hall. She's just kind of like a soft singer. You know, can you tell me anything about her
I can tell you all about her. I'll play a song and tell you about her.
All right.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. So, yes,
we will indeed do that. Maybe coming up in moments right here, 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Gonna love me, not you. You will be gone, and here I will stay, all alone, and I'll just waste away. Wondering who is gonna hold me and keep me warm when I'm cold. No one to echo. to end these tears? And who is gonna kiss me if you walk out the door? There'll be no one new, not for me, 'cause my whole life is you. Darling, if you don't wanna love me, there's just no use hanging on. For without your love, everything is gone.
WGN Radio, I'm Rally James. 1968 on Scepter. Yeah, of course, back right, David. Who is gonna love me? Great, great song, and she was from a musical family. Her mom was a Drinkard. The Drinkard Sisters, they were a family gospel group, and not only her mom, Lee, but her mom's sister, Sister Houston, and a number of other people in that group as well. In fact, I think that Dion first made her television debut on some gospel TV show singing with the Drinkard Sisters. It was interesting because she did a lot of gospel, but she knew New Hope Baptist in Newark, I think, but she wound up at Hart College of Music in Hartford, Connecticut, and she really wanted to pursue this, and she wound up being a background singer in New York, and in fact, she met Burt Bacharach, and he hired her pretty much on the spot to record his demos. So she was a demo singer, and that was, I've told this many times because, of course, it was Jerry Butler's lucky day. What had happened was they were looking for material at BJ, and I think Vivian's brother Calvin went to New York and came back with a demo for a song that Dionne Warwick had done. And Jerry Butler said, well, that's perfect. You know, they should release it just the way it is. And they should have. It was Make It Easy on Yourself. And he said, I couldn't do better than that. And so what turned out is that she was on Scepter, which was Florence Greenberg's label. And Florence was mercurial, to say the least. And for whatever reason, Florence didn't like it. And so she said, we're not going to release that. And so Jerry Butler got on a plane, went to New York, said, I want the same musicians. I want the same session. I want the same everything because I want to do that just like Dionne Warwick did, Make It Easy on Yourself. And that's how he had that hit. But Dionne, and, you know, it was a bad call for Florence, to say the least. But there were others from the Gospel Heirs, who the Drinkard Sisters became the Gospel Heirs, like Judy Clay and Doris Troy were in that. And then most of the Gospel Heirs became the Sweet Inspirations. So there was a lot of that. And the Sweet Inspirations did a lot of backup stuff, too, like Garnet Mims or the Drifters, you know, you name it. It was on and on. But she was performing Dionne, whose name, by the way, was Marie. It was Marie Dionne. But anyway, she was performing as a backup singer for the Drifters, and that's where Burt Bacharach heard her and found her. And that's when he said, yeah, this is what I want. You know, you're going to do all my demos. And so, you know, not only Make It Easy on Yourself, but so much more. But by the time Make It Easy on Yourself became a hit for Jerry Butler, she already was having hit records, because in 62, Scepter released her first solo single, Don't Make Me Over, another, you know, Bacharach and David. And it was great. But It was interesting because Warwick came up with the title for Don't Make Me Over because she was being, you know, kind of beaten into submission by Bacharach and David. Sing it this way, do it this way, whatever, and said, don't make me over, and say, oh, hey. So next thing you know, there you have it. And as I say, she wanted Make It Easy on Yourself to be the first release, but yeah, didn't happen that way. And so, but it is fine. After that, she started to her second and third single didn't do anything. But then Anyone Who Had a Heart came up a year later. That was November 63, I think. And then Walk On By, you know, which was, and on the hits went. And, you know, if you had to say anything about her, it was that she was one of the few who weathered the British invasion. because, of course, you know, that was one of the things that, that killed a lot of pop. And, you know, obviously, Do You Know the Way to San Jose, which Lori referenced, was just huge. But a lot of our other stuff, like Anyone Who Had a Heart, that was number one in the UK, for instance. And, you know, I think that Cilla Black had wound up trying to record her stuff, and in fact later Warwick covered You're My World and so on and on. But she was huge. She was a Cashbox, so she was the best-selling single. That was probably Jukebox sales, and maybe second only to like Pet Clark. So she did well into the early 70s, like Message to Michael and stuff like that. And you know, she's has staying power, that's to say the least. And you've seen her on television a lot, hawking things on the shopping networks. And then I think there were two things that really went bad with her, as far as, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, so don't hold me to facts, but one of them was that a numerologist told her that her slump at the time was because numerologically the name didn't work, so she added an E to her name, Dionne Warwick with an E, and that didn't work at all. So then she took the E out. Now you can decide whether or not that that mattered at all. But she then wound up, kind of, maybe it wasn't a mistake. I leave it to others to decide on that. But she wound up doing infomercials for psychics. And oh my God. And she was not good with her own money. She had filed a Chapter 7, you know, total bankruptcy in 2013. And she, you know, I don't know how that worked out, because I think she owed like $7 million to the IRS and $3 million to California or something. And usually they don't agree on anything. So I don't know what happened with the bankruptcy in that. You know, like, was it forgiven? I would assume, I guess. But Dee Dee Warwick, her sister, not as well known, but just killer stuff. The original version of You're No Good, which we've played before, that Betty Everett had a hit with, and more. So yeah, I would, and of course Sissy Houston, I don't have to tell you, and she was absolutely the queen of the gospel world as far as that goes. And of course her daughter was Whitney Houston. So that's what else am I supposed to know? I don't know. I hope that's enough, Laura. So 888-876-5593. Let's check out the news. And we've got Diane and we got James and hopefully you and WGN Radio.
I echoing back the blues the night. Now let me tell you, baby, my mama done told me when I was a knee pants. My mama done told me, she said, son, now let me tell you, a woman of sweet talk, she'd give you the baby guys.
Clooney or Artie Shaw's version, but my favorite version of Blues in the Night, yes indeed, Stax Records. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Barb is a first-time caller, and she's in Yorkville. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you.
What's up?
Yes, I listened, I just turned the radio on, and I was hearing that a man talk about his eye problems.
Yeah.
and I would like to talk about mine because I have a question and maybe some other doctor could answer it eventually.
That would be great. God knows it won't be me, but I'd love to hear the question.
Right. Okay. I was going up to my bedroom on my stairs in my apartment 9 years ago, and I didn't quite get up to the top, and my right eye went black. I mean, I couldn't see.
Right.
And I fell down the stairs and broke my ankle. I had to be in a nursing home for 2.5 months.
Oh, my God.
Well, anyways, I have macular degeneration and glaucoma.
Right.
So I go to Brennert Eye Clinic here in Yorkville, and I get shots in my good eye, and they're trying to save it so I don't go completely blind.
Absolutely.
And the question I had for my doctor last time I saw him, I said, how come I had cataract surgery on both eyes, and why didn't this macular show up, and why couldn't these doctors that might have spotted it report it? And he said, I don't know. So that's the important question.
Well, and I think probably the reason he didn't know is that the studies that have been, and they have done studies on this between, AMD and cataract surgery. And what they've seen so far is there's no increased risk of AMD from the cataract surgery. They're not seeing a correlation. Now, that doesn't mean that it can't happen, but...
Right, that's what he thought.
Right. Exactly. So, but the human body is so unique in so many ways to each individual that that anything is possible. Now, I would think if you already had the macular degeneration and you were going to do the cataract surgery, you'd be looking at, am I going to have an issue with detaching retinas or macular edema or something? But I haven't heard of any risk of developing or progressing in AMD?
No, I hadn't either, but I donate because they're doing research and they're trying to find a cure because there's no cure and there's no reason. Then we don't even know why it starts. The only thing they can guess is because I was a smoker, and they think part of the degenerative might have gotten started partly from smoking.
That's a guess.
And I smoked.
Now,
my whole family smoked.
Do you have dry or wet?
I don't remember to tell you the truth.
Well, that can be a factor, too. But, all of this, I always say it's the practice of medicine because they're still practicing. All of this is somewhat of a guess. So they talk about genetic and environment, and that's where they're saying maybe you're a smoker because they're looking for they're looking for environmental concerns or whatever. But they don't know that.
They don't know for sure.
No, exactly. So, but there's two main types. That's dry and wet. Most people have dry. Probably like 80%. But again, same, genetic or environment or, who knows the phase of the moon. Fortunately, the condition as far as any degeneration is slow. But that doesn't help you when you're sitting at that point saying, hey, it better not get too much worse than this. So,
I'm lucky to get help from the state by an agency called New Era. And they have someone come out 4 to 6 hours one day a week to help me go grocery shopping.
Good.
And then they do a little bit of housework.
Good.
But today we even got to go shopping, and I got to get some new clothes for a change.
Excellent. Well, that was a
so
good
I'm in
day.
A good mood.
Yeah, it was.
It really was a great day.
That's good. That's good. Well, hopefully there'll be many more of those, and I'm glad there is agency help and all that kind of stuff. Now, have they done any of the injections to try and improve visual acuity?
I've been getting the injections since last year.
Okay. Any?
I went to one doctor in Naperville, and then I came back to Yorkville to Dr. Galasso.
Any success?
That's
in that?
His name.
Has it?
Well,
been?
It's. Yet I haven't lost the sight in the left eye yet,
good.
So I
good.
Think it's helping.
Excellent.
But
well, let's keep that up. Yeah, I'll keep you.
Well, I go on the 8th of March, Friday. I have another appointment, and he's going to try a new medicine.
Oh, excellent. Well, let me know how that goes. I'd be curious.
All right. And your name is Raleigh?
Yep, absolutely, like the city, but it's not spelled like that.
What is it?
R-O-L-L-Y-E.
Oh, all right. I had R-O-L-L-Y without the E.
There you
okay.
go. Just add
well,
an E.
It was nice
me.
Talking
Likewise.
To you.
Thank you for calling.
Do you have time for one quick other comment?
Sure. What do you got?
I am very disgusted with the Supreme Court, what they did. I think they got bought out by Donald Trump, and that he can still stay on the he can still stay on the ballots, and I think the Supreme Court should be dismissed, and we should get a new Supreme Court.
Well, my definition of politics is poly is many, and ticks are blood-sucking parasites. So that's,
yeah, but I've been in politics.
Yeah, well, we try to.
Governor. I helped Dan Walker get in back in the 70s.
We try to stay away from it on this show to give people a break.
Yeah,
and you know, there's people.
I understand.
There's people from all sides of the aisle, and the thing that saddens me most right now is that most people have become so emotional, whatever their side of view is on it, that they have a lot invested in it emotionally. So I figure, well, if I can give somebody 3 hours of peace and quiet to not think about that, we'll do that.
Yes, that's great.
Yep.
I'm glad you're there.
Well,
I never found you before.
Well, I'm delighted
thank
you did.
You
I'll talk
much.
To you soon. All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Barb.
Thank
right.
you, Raleigh. I
yeah.
appreciate it. Thank
yeah.
you.
So,
bye-bye.
There you have it. All right, so, yeah, 888-876-5593. Yes, if I did a political show, it'd be very easy. There's plenty to talk about. But, you know, that's migraine-inducing. Now, while I was talking to Barb, I just looked at the chart for macular degeneration. I better stop looking at this chart right about now. So 888-876-5593. I have a feeling that D.B. Cooper is going to happen tomorrow night, that I lied. Yeah, it could be. Could be tomorrow night, because I want to talk to you guys first. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We will continue. We will see what we've got. Isaac in Chicago, and Annette and Carol Stream, and Diane in Chicago, and Laura in Willowbrook. And yeah, I was going to say there's one line available for you, but it just went. And James on the South Side. So, hey, great. We'll see what we can do in 15 minutes right here on WGN Radio.
Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. She is sorry to be delayed, but last evening down in Lover's Lane she strayed. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. When she woke up and found that her dream of love was gone, madam, she ran to the man who had led her so far astray. And from under her velvet gown, she drew a gun and shot her lover down. Oh, madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that's 1992 from Girl Singer on Rosemary Clooney. And, you know, I think I like that version of Miss Otis Regrets even better than the original in 64 that she had done. Not original for the song, obviously, that goes way, way back. But yeah, it was JFPO, James Francis Patrick O'Neill, who introduced me to Girl Singer, that album. And yeah, I miss him. All right, so 888-876-5593. Let's see. I actually have a little thing that tells me how long people have been waiting. So who is the victim here? All right, so I guess it's Isaac in Chicago. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. The song Blues in the Night, I didn't realize that was a Cole Porter song. That song, it's really, really, really been done by just everybody. Yeah. I'm surprised it's only 300 people that have recorded it. I assume that it was an old Negro spiritual because so many black artists like Louis Armstrong, Della Reese, Probe, you know, the list goes on and on. The same thing goes with Miss Otis Regrets.
Yeah.
That one goes back. Ethel Waters did a recording of that back in like the 30s, I think, something like that. I was calling in because I wanted to know if you knew anything about. I know that Dionne Warwick was a really striking beauty. She really, like her high cheekbones and all that. Though I guess the only thing kind of holding her back was her teeth, which she attempted to try and get them fixed. And she's had her jaw broken many times trying to get them fixed. I was wondering if you knew anything about it.
Well, I know that she had an overbite from the time she was a child. And some of the earlier pictures, you can see there was work done on her. But, she had bone loss because of a jawbone disease, not because of the teeth.
And really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so that's the procedure she had to stop the bone loss was the issue with her. And so.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, Rosemary Clooney, one of my favorite songs by her, and I think this is one of her well-known songs, Sweet Kentucky Ham?
Okay.
That's one of my favorites by her. She has a real smooth, jazzy voice. I love Rosemary Clooney. Yeah. That's all I wanted to say, Raleigh. Have a good night.
Thanks for calling, Isaac. Good to hear from you. All right, so let's see. Diane in Chicago has been hanging on and for 27 minutes and 15 seconds, so a real trooper. Diane, welcome back to WGN.
Okay, thank you, Johnny. I mean, Johnny.
Raleigh.
I was, anyway, I wanted to just remark on Rosemary Clooney. One of the songs I like is her This Old House.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, this book I'm reading is, I like biographies, and this is on Thomas Paine, but it's during that, this guy talks about in the mid-1850s, and I don't want to be flippant about things because I do have Barbara calling. She seemed so upbeat and cheerful on hopefully that left eye or whichever eye of hers that the macular is actually been, cured or whatever, because they do a lot. There's a lot of research being done, which leads me to this thing. There was a lot of interest, of course, when ether was discovered in 1846 and anesthesia. So people, and during that time, people had interest in mesmerism and suspended animation.
Of course,
cetera,
yes,
like mummy,
yes.
Mummy seeds.
Yes.
Mummy seeds that they grew, and then supposedly reanimated bugs that were deep inside household furniture for generations, and then they were able to be, and they were alive. But here's what this one doctor, it was the New York Observer in 1857, Dr. Sanford. People were, there was a interest, photography, of course, was, a thing right then, and the mysteries of what people thought of things like that. Anyway, there was a belief that corpse retina retained last image for 48 hours after death, last image that it saw.
Okay.
So this Dr. Sanford was written up in the 1857 New York Observer. Wrote about Dr. Sanford, who said he used a weak solution of atrophine, which evidently produced an enlarged state of the pupil.
Mm-hmm.
We applied a powerful lens and discovered the pupil that rude, worn-out figure of a man in a light coat,
uh-huh,
tied home as a round stone,
uh-huh,
standing suspended in the air with a small handle. It was the last image that the person. The murderer.
Right.
So anyway, I just thought I'd just throw that in.
There have been actual television shows and stuff about this kind of stuff. The idea, the telltale eye, that the eye retains and therefore, you can know what happened. Yeah, it's hilarious. It's not true, but it's hilarious.
I wonder, though, could it? I guess
well,
not.
Well, who knows? But it's called retinal optography is what what it is.
Oh.
And so they're optograms are supposedly images from the eyes of the dead. You can read about that, but I've never heard anything that would let me say, oh, yeah, I'm down for that. But I will say what they have discovered is, and I don't know how they know this either, but that the last sense to go as you're dying, the last sense to go is your hearing. And so
hearing, yeah, I've heard that.
If you're with somebody who is dying, talk to them and let them know, you know, soothe them as much as you can. So because that I know. But optograms, I don't know.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
But that was an era when people were interested in all kinds of things
like
that.
Absolutely. Yeah, sometimes a little knowledge is dangerous.
Right. There are seances and things like that, and a lot of hoaxes.
Well, and then the horrors of you know, the experiments on people without their consent. We don't need to go there. And Dr. Mengele comes to mind.
I suppose in the Nicaragua and Poland, people being buried alive.
Well, yeah. Absolutely. All right, Diane, it's good to talk to you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, so 888-876-5593 will take us to Annette and Carol Stream. What's happening, Annette?
Hi, Raleigh. I know you don't have very many minutes left, so I'll try to be quick. I've been listening quite a bit tonight about your discussion about the cataracts and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I have an eye disease called retinitis pigmentosa.
Oh, yes,
which
RP.
Most people... Okay, yeah, a lot of people don't know anything about it. It's pretty rare. And, you know, it has some similarities to macular degeneration, but it's quite different.
Yes.
And mine is definitely inherited.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you know, you can get all kinds of other things wrong with you, too. And I'm in my late 60s, and mine has progressed very slowly since I was a child. But in the past year or so, my central vision, which is what you usually keep the longest with therapy, has gotten much worse. And so I'm thinking I either have glaucoma or cataracts. And the thing is, several years ago when I went in, they did say I had the beginnings of cataracts, but they gave me that thing about they're not ready to take off yet.
Yeah, well, they don't do that anymore as far as that goes, because you don't have to have them ripe or anything like that. But if you're dealing with RP, hopefully you have a very good ophthalmologist who specializes in retina.
Well, yeah, there are some at this clinic near me, but one I used to see for a lot of years has retired.
Yeah,
so
I hate when that happens, but do yourself a favor you know, don't settle for just one. Meet several. Find out somebody who you can use as your go-to guy, because when you're facing that, especially if it's starting to speed up, you want to know you've got somebody you can call, somebody who's on the same page, and that may take interviewing a few of them, but I'd get a retina specialist to, you know, really put me at ease. Otherwise, you know, you're going to have problems.
Yeah, well, my problem is right now I'm dealing with cancer in another part of my body, and so I'm not having a whole lot of time to go to eye doctors at the moment.
Oh, I know. And, of course, the treatment for that can be a bitch, too, because that affects every cell in your body.
It is. Yeah.
So, but that's all the more reason why. All I'm saying is I would make this more of an emergency than you may be doing, because you need that support if something happens.
Yeah.
And I'm so sorry you're going through. Are you going through chemo?
Yes. I've already had radiation. And so, yeah, it is a bitch.
it is a bitch. And good for you, because you're sounding great. You're a real trooper. I couldn't do it. I'd just say, put me under the ground.
I just wanted to say also, I found out a thing recently, and it's because I heard somebody on your show talking about trying to read their prescriptions, and I suddenly have like a whole lot of prescriptions I didn't have before, and I'm having trouble reading them.
Yep.
So I found out there's this place called Script Talk. Are you familiar with that?
Yes. And you know what? If you will call me tomorrow night, because I've just run out of time, I will be on the air at 10 o'clock, and we can talk all about it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. And apologies to John in Oak Long who had song questions. So call me tomorrow night. I love to talk music. It's a lot of fun. Laura and Willowbrook for her requests. And of course, James and his millions of stories. So we got 3 hours tomorrow night. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But especially, I thank you for calling it. Makes it easy for me to do. And I like easy. And we'll talk to you tomorrow night on WGN Radio.